On behalf of NA World Services, we welcome you to the World Unity Day meeting at WCNA 31. Today, those of us in the room joined together with thousands of addicts connected by telephone from 95 locations in 27 countries around the world to celebrate One Fellowship, Many Friends. These locations include 16 correctional institutions in 9 U.S. states, 4 of those connections are here in Hawaii. We also have a connection with a prison in Medellin, Colombia. Our fellowship began 52 years ago as a few members in California dreamt of having a place where addicts could come together regularly to help each other stay clean. By 1970, there were still less than 100 Narcotics Anonymous meetings in the world, most of those in California. By the early 1980s, we had approximately 2,000 meetings in 6 English-speaking countries and Germany. Now, Narcotics Anonymous meetings are held in more than 123 countries on 6 continents. Today, in over 35,500 registered meetings, we show by our actions that the lie is dead and recovery is both possible and available. Our basic text is published in 14 languages, the most recent being Farsi. The 15th language will be available soon, as the text is currently in production in Japanese. We have approved literature written in 41 languages. There are over 300 projects currently being translated into nearly 50 languages, including Latvian, Tamil, Vietnamese, and Zulu. We know that our personal recovery depends on NA unity, and today I am so grateful to be able to be part of this unique demonstration of our fellowship's unity. Each of us is a part of making our first tradition, our common welfare should come first, personal recovery depends on NA unity, a reality in a very real and meaningful way that was only a dream not so long ago. Although each of us may take something different away from this meeting, our hope is that each of us will experience a vision of how truly powerful the miracle of recovery is and can be, both globally and personally. Our hope is that each of us leaves this meeting with a renewed commitment and passion about our own recovery and a commitment to help carry our message to the addict who still suffers. Today we celebrate the reality that we truly are one fellowship with many friends. Thank you.
I'm an addict named Craig. Aloha. There's one that Bob missed. What's up, dog? If nothing else, I know a good thing when I see it, and I'm an opportunist. And now that I have all of you people together under one roof, there are a couple things I've been wanting to say. The first is, thank you. Your groups, your areas, your regions, and you as a member, thank you for your support in helping us carry the message worldwide. And the last thing is, it is such an honor to be of service to the program that saved my life. Thank you for that privilege. I believe that being clean is a privilege, not a right. So thank you for helping change my life today and tomorrow. Thank you. We have a full agenda for you this morning. Speaker, the phone line, hook up, and we're just going to have a good time and celebrate our recovery. In 1992, the World Service Conference originally adopted the idea that NA have one day when addicts around the world could come together to say the Serenity Prayer as one global community. The expectation was that this would be both a demonstration of our unity and of the power of one addict helping another. This original idea has grown into now what we call World Unity Day. Unity Day is much more than the sum of all its parts. This is the day we celebrate our diversity, our courage, our strength, and our unity as a fellowship. We do this by joining together around the world and saying the Serenity Prayer. We do this with introductions of a sample of some of the many groups that are participating today. We do this by listening to the readings in languages other than our own. We do this by listening to the readings in languages other than our own. We do this when we leave here today and take a moment, one moment, for the addict who is lost, scared, or confused. Whether we are at the World Convention or sitting with another member in our living room, we take time, we stop to notice. We remember that the newcomer is the lifeblood of our fellowship, and we reach out in loving support to anyone with the struggle who is struggling with his or her recovery. We have tried to create an agenda for today's meeting that meets the needs of those of us who are fortunate enough to be present, as well as those joining us by telephone. In order to accomplish this agenda, we need your cooperation. I will provide an overview of the meeting, followed by the MCI operator, who will facilitate introductions by members in approximately 20 of the 95 locations that are joining us by telephone. Please hold your applause until all of the calls have been introduced. You can show your support by silent applause. You guys know how to do that? Good. I knew you guys could handle that. Immediately following the introductions, we will all say the Serenity Prayer together. We will then pass the basket for the Unity Day collection. This collection is done to help pay for the majority of the telephone connections who are joining us today. Through your generosity, we are able to provide free connections to quite a few communities outside of North America, as well as to several U.S. penitentiaries. I think we should have a hand of applause for that. We will begin the readings to open the meeting as soon as the collection has begun. Please help us by allowing these readings to proceed as quickly as possible in consideration for those joining us on the telephone. Following the readings, we will hear from our speaker, Gina. After Gina shares with us, we will have the clean time countdown. We have moved the countdown to the end of this meeting so that the callers have the option to stay on the line or drop off the call at that point. Joining us today are approximately 70 United States connections, including correctional institutions in New York, California, including San Quentin Prison, Ohio, Michigan, Massachusetts, the Hole in the Wall group in Oregon State Penitentiary, and two women's facilities, one in Berkshire County, Massachusetts, and one in Huron Valley, Michigan. In addition, we have 4 correctional facilities here in Hawaii. We also have over 25 connections from NA communities around the world, the globe. They include members in Australia, Bahrain, Bolivia, Brazil, Canada, Chile, Colombia, the Dominican Republic, Ecuador, Guatemala, Honduras, India, Iran, Mexico, New Zealand, Norway, Nepal, Norway again. One is too many, 1,000, okay. Panama, the island of Panama, Peru, Russia, Saudi Arabia, South Africa, Spain, Uruguay, and Venezuela. In order to give you a visual representation of the telephone locations that will also be joining us for the introductions, please watch the screen. We are having technical difficulties this morning. Didn't know that was in the script. We're having technical difficulties this morning. But this should give you an idea of who is joining us in the morning, who will be joining us this morning. Lights down. Is that part of the technical difficulties? Just keep, okay, cool. Everything we know is subject to revision. Okay. We thank each of you for giving us the opportunity to help this meeting a reality. And we would like to stop now and hear from those joining us on the telephone. Again, I know this is exciting for me as well as everyone here. Please hold your applause until the end so that they can hear us, and more importantly, so we can hear them. We will now turn the meeting over to the MCI operator.
Good afternoon from the MCI Conference Calling Center in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. We have members from Oregon State Penitentiary Hole in the Wall Group on the line. Would the members please say hello?
This is a Hole in the Wall group at the Oregon State Penitentiary, and we have 50 members here, and we are celebrating Unity Day inside the penitentiary.
We now have the members from Central Louisiana on the line. Would the members please say hello?
St. Alexandria, Louisiana, coming up from New Orleans. We'd like to bless some people down there and invite everyone to stay strong, and thank you all for this.
Thank you. We now have the members from Brazil on the line. Would the members please say hello?
Hello, this is Michael V. from the Southern Brazil region. We're at an regional and area encounter of the Porto Alegre area with about 50 people present.
Thank you. We now have the members from India on the line. Would the members please say hello?
Hello, this is Yashoda again. We are here at Darjeeling Convention with 250 recovering addicts, and we love anyway.
We now have the members from Greater Mojave on the line. Would the members please say hello? Thank you. We now have the members from Colombia online. Would the members please say hello? Thank you. We now have the members from South Africa online. Would the members please say hello? We now have the members from Norway on the line. Would the members please say hello?
Yes, hello, this is from Norway. We would like to thank you all for being alive, doing what you're doing, and giving us the chance to be here and be together with you tonight. And we also want to send our best wishes to our members over there with you. Thank you.
Thank you. We now have the members from Mid-America online. Would the members please say hello? Thank you. We now have the members from New Zealand on the line. Would the members please say hello?
We've got around about 4 million people here. We're loving it. It's great to be here today. And just a special shout out to DJ and all our NA members from New Zealand, Jenny, Leon, all the rest of them. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you. We now have the members from South Florida online. Would the members please say hello? We now have the members from Spain on the line. Would the members please say hello?
Hello? Hola? 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 Hola, ¿me oyes?
We now have the members from Iran on the line. Would the members please say hello?
Hello. Hello. Hello.
Iran, your connection is open.
Okay. Hello to everyone. Hello, we love you.
Iran, we can hear you. Please continue.
Hello?
Iran, go ahead.
Yeah, in the name of love, my name is Mahmoud. Vayed Motaz Hassan. I am an addict from Iran. I would like to thank members who have helped to hold this convention and who have given this opportunity to me to share about NA medical in Iran. You know, after 2 years of active addiction and having so many unsuccessful tries to stop using, I finally got to know NA in Iran about 9 years ago. In those days, there were only 20 members and only one group with 3 meetings in Iran. I kept coming back to the meeting, but it took me 2 more years to become clean. I remember I always promised myself if I could get clean, I would do my best to serve NA in any way I could. The miracle happened and I got clean and started service in NA, but in my own way. My way was to be self-centered and making everyone to listen to me and do what I told them to do. In one word, I wanted to be the boss. All those self-centeredness, arrogance, and resentment affect our unity that causes some members to relapse and newcomers not to stay, and also the community and our government to be skeptical of NA. After a long conflict that affects the fellowship very badly in Iran, thank you God, we came to our sense and decided to try to learn how to be of real service. So, we thought the best thing is to contact NA World Service. From then, we start to learn how to work as a group. We start to translate the NA literature and learn to start practicing the principle, spiritual principle of unity. The further we got away from our personalities and our personal defects, the more we grew. Now, after 5 or 6 years, as a result of our unity, we have about 2,400 group all over Iran with more than 29,000 members. Every day we receive more newcomers, and our community has accepted us as a respectful international fellowship. Today our growth has been so much that the NA World Services have done Iranian fellowship a big favor and have opened up their fourth branch of office in Iran. I personally think that the NA program works all over the world and no boundaries can stop it. For example, two of us were going to join you in this gathering who were stopped due to geographical and political boundaries. But those boundaries could not stop us to having a spiritual relationship because we are members of one family, and I really believe in one fellowship, many friends. I hope someday I can come to the U.S. and visit World Service and anything there and learn more and more. The Iranian Fellowship is young fellowship and needs you all to help us keep growing and making any message of recovery available to more suffering addicts. In the end, I would like to say hello and thank you all, especially Ushi, Becky, Anthony, Mike, and my sponsor, Kevan. I love you, Kevan, for their support and unconditional love. Thank you.
All right. Well, yeah.
Thank you for standing by. Your lines will be placed in the listen-only mode for the duration of today's conference call. If at any time during the conference you need assistance, you may press star zero on your phone.
My name's Anthony, and I'm an addict. I'd like to thank Mahmoud in Iran very much for sharing his experience, strength, and hope with us. But I'd like to thank everybody who came online to demonstrate what it is that we say, that Narcotics Anonymous has no politics, religion, gender. All we care about is what you want to do about your problem and how we can help, and that formula works everywhere in the world. You know, there are a great many things that listening to our members from around the world inspires you to say. But I think the biggest testament of the work we still have ahead of us is what just happened. The member who shared was supposed to be standing on this stage last night. We were unable to get him permission to enter the United States so that he could come share a message of recovery with you. So we decided to overcome that barrier with a little technology. Thank God it worked this morning. You know, as often as we do things to try to be perfect, and those of us on this stage, at least the one speaking to you, is no different, we wanted to have an elaborate satellite display going around the world, of location to location, and this dazzling array for you to see this morning. But the truth is, the spirit of who we are is what we just listened to, and we don't need any of that other crap to reflect what Narcotics Anonymous is really all about. As often happens in our fellowship, there are things that many people refer to as being coincidence. And that's how we will choose to describe what I'm getting ready to talk about for just a second. It just so happens that today, and we had nothing to do with it, the state of Hawaii is acknowledging what is known in the United States as Recovery Month, which is September, with a moment of silence at noon today for addicts who still suffer. It just so happens it's 10 minutes after 12. We have had that commemoration happen around us, and I'm going to ask for just a second that we take and acknowledge what we all know to be the spirit inside and take a moment of silence for the addict that's still suffering who's not sitting in this room today or listening to us on the telephone. Thank you. The other thing that has happened is that this morning we had the opportunity to be joined by some friends. Many of you saw the invitation that was extended by the governor of the state of Hawaii, and a representative of his office joined us this morning along with other friends. And some of you have come up to me and asked, what does that have to do with Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous? Why do we have these kinds of interactions? Why are we doing television interviews and newspaper articles and radio broadcasts? And the answer is really simple. The answer is that people like this affect the lives of addicts every single day. And people like this make decisions about whether or not addicts will ever get an opportunity to see the inside of a Narcotics Anonymous meeting or not. And people like this are the kind of people that we need to say we're here and available for addicts who desire to be here with us. Please send them to our rooms. Craig explained earlier about the Unity Day collection, and again, the only reason it is done is as a matter of policy from the World Service Conference and to help offset the expense of providing those telephone connections. So the Unity Day collection is actually going to start while we begin doing the greetings for this morning's meeting. Today we have asked Beto from Mexico to read Who is an Addict in Spanish.
Thank you, family. My name is Beto and I'm an addict. Yo soy Humberto, Beto, y soy adicto. ¿Quién es un adicto? La mayoría no tenemos que pensar dos veces esta pregunta. Conocemos la respuesta. Toda nuestra vida y nuestros pensamientos giraban, de una u otra forma, en torno a las drogas. Cómo obtenerlas, cómo consumirlas, y el modo de conseguir más. Vivíamos para consumirlas y las consumíamos para vivir. En síntesis, una persona adicta es aquella cuya vida está controlada por las drogas. Estamos en las garras de una enfermedad crónica y progresiva que nos arrastra invariablemente a los mismos lugares. Cárceles, hospitales y la muerte. Gracias.
I was so emotional that I actually forgot something. After a moment of silence for all those who care to join me in saying the Serenity Prayer. God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Now, Iwa from Sweden is going to read What is the NA Program in Finnish.
Hej, jag heter Eva och är en beroende. My name is Eva, I'm an addict. And in Finnish. Mun nimi on Eva ja minä olen addikti. I like to read in Finnish because my parents are from Finland. I have a Finnish passport, but I'm born and raised in Sweden. And for me it's very important to be in contact with this language. And all my relatives in Finland are living in Finland. And I've been in Finland many times and met the Finnish fellowship there. So I used to say, I'm Finnish, but I'm not finished. I just started. So I'm going to read, what is the NA program? Mikä on nimetty meidän narkomaanien ohjelma? Enna on hyötyä tavoittelematon miesten ja naisten toveriseura niille, joilla huumeista on muodostunut ensisijainen ongelma. Olemme toipuvia addikteja ja kokoonnumme säännöllisesti auttaaksemme toisiamme pysymään puhtaana. Tämä on ohjelma, jossa pidätetään täysin kaikista huumeista. Jäsenyydelle on vain yksi edellytys, haluaa lopettaa käyttäminen. Ehdottamme, että suhtaudut asiaan ennakkoluottomasti ja annat itsellesi mahdollisuuden. Ohjelma koostuu niin yksinkertaisista periaatteista, että voimme noudattaa niitä jokapäiväisessä elämässämme. Tärkeintä niissä on, että ne toimivat. It works. Enna ei liity mitään ehtoja. Emme kuulu mihinkään muihin järjestöihin. Meillä ole liittymys eikä jäsenmaksuja. Emme tee emmekä allekirjoita huumeetumus tai muita lupauksia. Emme ole sidoksissa miehinkään poliittisiin tai uskonnollisuihin ryhmiin, emmekä viranomaisiin eikä meitä valvota millään tavoin. Kuka tahansa voi liittyä meihin ikään, rotuun, sukupuoli-identiteettiin, vakumukseen, uskontoon tai sen puuttumiseen katsomatta. Emme ole kiinnostuneita siitä, mitä tai miten paljon olet käyttänyt, emmekä siitä, mitä yhteyksissä sinulla on ollut. Meitä ei kiinnosta sekään, mitä olet aiemmin tehnyt, eikä se, mitä varakas tai köyhä olet. Meitä kiinnostaa vain se, mitä haluat tehdä ongelmallesi ja miten me voimme auttaa. Tulokas on ryhmän tärkein henkilö, koska voimme säilyttää sen, mitä meillä on, vain antamalla sen pois. Ryhmäkokemuksesta olemme oppineet, että ne, jotka säännöllisesti tulevat ennakokouksiin, pysyvät puhtaana. I just want to say that on my t-shirt it said in Swedish, the bridge to freedom. And that's what I've been experiencing this weekend. Thank you.
And now Cynthia from North Carolina will read how it works in English.
Aloha family, my name is Cynthia and I'm an addict. How it works. If you want what we have to offer and are willing to make the effort to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. These are the principles that made our recovery possible. One, we admitted that we were powerless over our addiction, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, we admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact natures of our wrongs. Six, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, we humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, we made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, we made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, we continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to addicts and to practice these principles in all our affairs. This sounds like a big order, and we can't do it all at once. We didn't become addicted in one day, so remember, easy does it. There's one thing more than anything else that would defeat us in our recovery. This is an attitude of indifference or intolerance towards spiritual principles. Three of these that are indispensable are honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. With these, we are well on our way. We feel that our approach to the disease of addiction is completely realistic, for the therapeutic value of one addict helping another is without parallel. We feel that this way is practical, for one addict can best understand and help another addict. We believe that the sooner we face our problems within our society and everyday living, just that much faster do we become acceptable, responsible, and productive members of that society. The only way to keep from returning to active addiction is not to take that first drug. If you are like us, you know that one is too many and 1,000 is never enough. We put great emphasis on this, for we know that when we use drugs in any form, or substitute one for another, we release our addiction all over again. Thinking of alcohol as different from other drugs has caused a great many addicts to relapse. Before we came to NA, many of us viewed alcohol separately, but we cannot afford to be confused about this. Alcohol is a drug. We are people with the disease of addiction who must abstain from all drugs in order to recover. Thanks for letting me share.
And finally, we're going to ask Adele from Bahrain to read the 12 traditions in Arabic.
Aloha.
My name is Adel. I'm Adek. I read the tools in vision. عن تقاليد 12 لزمالة المدمنين المجهولين. نحن نحتفظ بما لدينا فقط باليقظة الحذر والشديدة تماما كلما أن الحرية الفرد تحقق عن طريق الخطوات 12. لذلك فإن الحرية المجموعة تنبع من تقاليدنا. طالما أننا الروابط التي تربط معنا أو أقوى من تلك التي يمكن أن تكون تفرقنا، سوف يكون كل شيء على ما يرام. واحد، أن مصلحتنا المشتركة يجب أن تأتي في المقدمة، والتعافي الشخصي يعتمد على وحدة زمالة مدمنين مجهولين. اثنين، لهدف المجموعة لا توجد سوف سلطة مطلقة واحدة له. عطوف علينا أن نسعي ليكون ضمير مجموعتنا موافقا لمشيئة وما قادرتنا وخدم متمنون وهم لا يحتمون. ثلاثة، المطلب الوحيد العضوية هو الرغبة في امتناع عن التعاطي. أربعة، يجب على كل مجموعة أن تكون مستقلة ذاتها إلا في الأمور التي تؤثر على مجموعات أخرى أو زمالة مدمنين مجهولين. خمسة، كل مجموعة ليس لها سوف هدف أساسي واحد، وهو حمل الرسالة للمدمن الذي لا زال يعاني. ستة، لا يجوز بدء لأي مجموعة من زمالة المدمنين مجهولين أن تؤيد أو تمول أو تعيق اسم زمالة أي مرفق ذي نشاط مشابه أو مشروع خارجي لكي لا تسبب مشاكل المال والامتلاكات أو الجاء في تحولنا عن هدفنا الأساسي. سبعة، يجب على كل مجموعة من زمالة المدمنين المجهولين أن تعتمد على نفسها تماما ونترفض أو معلومات خارجية. ثمانية، زمالة المدمنين المجهولين أن تبقي أبدا غير مهنية، ولكن مراكز الخدمات توظف عملية متخصصة. تسعة، زمالة المدمنين المجهولين بها مفهوم لا ينبغي أبدا أن تكون منطقة، ولكننا فإن ننشي مجالس خدمات ولجان تكون مسؤولة مباشرة نحو من خدمته. عشرة، زمالة المدمنين المجهولين ليس لها أي في القضايا الخارجية، ولذلك لا ينبغي أن يجري اسم زمالة المدمنين المجهولين جدل علني. 11، أن سياستنا في العلاقات العامة قام على جذب من الدعاية، نحتاج دائما أن نحافظ على مجهولية شخصية على مستوى الصحافة والدعاية والأفلام. 12، المجهولية الأساسية الروحية لكل تقاليدنا، نتذكر دائما بنا أن نقدم المواد قبل الشخصيات. Thank you.
Bob already did briefly something that we all need to do at this point, and that is a great many of you volunteered, signed up online to come here to Hawaii to be a service to try to make this a better opportunity and convention for all of us. So a very special mahalo, which actually means more than thank you. It means a sincere gratitude to every single person who was of service here at the convention, and to let you know there were over 1,000 of you who volunteered some portion of your time to help make this convention happen. And again, to the Hawaii Support Committee members, for all your hard work, please stand and let us show you that we're grateful. Mahalo. This is also the opportunity that we take to thank the 14 main speakers, many of here of whom on stage, 90 workshop speakers who shared with us this weekend, and all of the other meeting participants, leaders, readers, marathon meeting leaders, who are really the crux of what this convention is. And again, the hundreds of volunteers who made this possible along with NAWA staff, thank you for a memorable event. And now, Without any further hesitation, it is a great privilege for me to introduce Gina S. to share a message of recovery with us this morning.
Good morning. Aloha. I'm an addict named Gina. Bear with me one sec. I want to thank God from the bottom of my heart for waking me up alive and clean and a member of Narcotics Anonymous. And I so want to thank the World Board for having a whole lot more faith in me than I have in myself. And thank you all on the NAWS staff and the World Board and the local host committee and all of you who have volunteered. I have worked on convention committees before, and if you think it's easy mobilizing 8,000 of us who don't listen real well and follow direction very easily. And thank you all. And for those of you on the phone, you know, when I got the call and they told me which meeting, I said, oh man, I can't do that meeting. I always cry at that meeting. And I was, and anybody who was watching me saw me up here blowing my nose. I'm okay with that. To those of you on the phone today, and a real special shout out to some of my girls, but a more special shout out to those of you in correctional facilities today. To be where you are, to know that you can't physically be with us, and to be in your situation and still believe in your heart that staying clean is still the answer, that recovery still offers a better life than anything else. You are my hero today, and I thank you for your inspiration. And a prayer to all of those down on the Gulf Coast who need it and who aren't with us and who are with us in spirit. And the suffering that goes on sometimes in our lives does not mean that staying clean for another day is not worth it. I got here for one very simple reason. I had no place else to go. I started using when I was 11 years old. And at the same time that I began to use, I found another addiction. I lost my virginity at 11 years old. And overnight, I went from being somebody that you didn't know to being that girl that you wrote about on the bathroom wall. I was the girl that your mothers told you not to hang around with because they talk about you like they talked about me. I was the girl that you boys showed up at my house for one reason and one reason only, and you knew I was going to give it up. I was the girl that you called my mother and said, your daughter's a whore. And as much as I hated it, and as much as it hurt, I didn't stop it. Because I wanted to be loved so badly. I just wanted somebody to care about me just a little bit. And if you laid with me for a few minutes, I thought that made it all okay. And it took me a long time after coming into the rooms to forgive myself for having accepted sex for so long when I wanted love and I just didn't know the difference. I very often hear people say that their best thinking got them into Narcotics Anonymous. I'll tell you, I envy you. My best thinking never could have come up with a place like NA. My best thinking at 15 years old was, why have you been giving it away for free? You know, people pay for this. I thought that was a sound business decision. So at 15, I took to the streets and became a prostitute. And I hear us sometimes say that when we began our addiction, we never knew where it was going to take us. I need to tell you, I always knew where it was going to take me, because from the first time that I used, I knew I was going to go the whole nine. I was going to do it again and again. It wasn't anything about I wasn't going to go there. I was in, and I was along for the ride. Because for the first time in my life, I found something that didn't necessarily take the pain away, but it made me numb enough that I just didn't care. I wasn't lucky enough to go to jail. My institution of choice was the flight deck. I went to those places where they took your luggage when you came in, and they went through and they took your sharps away. They put paper slippers on you and you walked up and down the hallway doing the Thorazine shuffle. And I used to come in and out of those places periodically, and you know, I never got locked up for being crazy. I always got locked up for acting crazy, and I knew the difference. I just didn't know how to stop the behavior. By the time I was 20 years old, I remember my last day out there. I don't know what it's like in the rest of the world, but I'll tell you what it's like in New York. The worst day of the week to be an addict is a Sunday morning. It was a cold, rainy Sunday morning. I was huddled in a doorway, and I had nowhere to go. And for the first time, I couldn't put a word to it, but I felt the surrender of knowing that the war was over. I was tired, and I was sick and tired of being sick and tired, and I just couldn't do it anymore. And for those of you who are here today who are younger, who are seeing what I thought when I got here were a whole bunch of old people. Let me tell you, by the grace of God, I'm going to be 43 years old, and the only reason I'm going to be that age is because I haven't used and I've stayed in Narcotics Anonymous. So for anybody who's young, let me tell you, some of us were young when we got here. And we were privileged enough to stay clean and stay here. And I'm okay today being a middle-aged broad. When I came into Narcotics Anonymous in 1983 in New York, NA was very new. I didn't know what I was walking into. And I didn't realize that April 27th, 1983 was going to be such a profound day in my life. Two things happened. One I knew, one I didn't. The one I didn't know about, it was on that day that the World Service Conference approved the basic text. And on my third day clean, I walked into my first NA meeting in Manhattan. You said, do you want what we have to offer? I don't know what kind of addict you are, but the kind of addict I am, I wanted to know what you had to offer up front, and I'd let you know if I wanted it. You told me, don't use and make meetings. And I did that, you know, and my sponsor shares about it. I got to be honest with you. I didn't do a whole lot else you asked. I came late. I left early. I sat in the back. I didn't ask you for your phone number. And I hung with the men. I walked in here in dresses that barely covered my butt and fishnet stockings and stiletto heels. What did you expect when you walk off of the streets? Did you think that coming into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous and putting the drugs down, I was going to get that much better? Give the newcomer a break. Yes, I slept my way through the rooms. It was what I did. And I didn't know any better until some of you loved me enough to take me by the hand and tell me you don't have to do that anymore. And I am grateful for those of you who saw that I did not have the courage to get up and walk across that room and get a cup of coffee. I am grateful to those of you who saw that I did not have the courage to ask you for your phone number. We get so arrogant sometimes when we've been here a little bit and say, you know, if newcomers want my number, well, they need to be willing to come up and ask me for it. I need to tell you, I didn't have the courage to ask you. I was someone who had been rejected my whole life, and I sure wasn't going to give you the chance to do it to me again. But there were people there who asked me for my phone number, and they called me. And I kept coming. I had about 4.5 months, and I met a guy who had 87 days. And if you are unclear about this, let me absolutely assure you that two sickos do not make a wello. And as much as I've tried to disprove this theory many times, I have finally come to accept that recovery is not sexually transmittable. tell the story the same way because I always want to tell a big lie about this wonderful relationship we had. The truth of the matter is that we had a one-night stand. And somewhere around 2 o'clock in the morning, I started planning our wedding. You know about that, right? You smile at me, I'm picking furniture out. And when he got up and left the next day, I never saw him again. And for the first time, I felt rejection clean. And I didn't really know how to handle it. And I didn't have a whole lot other than some phone numbers and these meetings. But what I finally realized was that I don't believe that you can do Narcotics Anonymous cafeteria style. I don't believe that you can take what you want and leave the rest. There is a program laid out in 12 steps and 12 traditions, and you're either going to do it or you're not. It doesn't work if you work it. It works even if you don't work it. It just may not work for you. But I finally realized that I needed a sponsor, and I started to look for a man. I figured I didn't have a whole lot in common with you ladies. You were catty, you were bitchy, you gossiped, and you'd steal my old man in a heartbeat if I let you. And the reason why I thought that about you is because that's what I did to you. So I projected my behavior onto every woman who crossed my path. And you know, they say that when the student is ready, that the teacher will appear. A man in my home group took me on the side and he told me something I'll never forget. He said, Gina, if you'd like to learn about men's problems, go talk to men. If you'd like to learn how to be a woman, you need another woman to teach you. Go get yourself a female sponsor. The sponsor that I got in October of 1983 is my sponsor today. And almost 22 years later, she is the longest continuous relationship that I have had in my entire life. I don't want to say too much nice about her because she's sitting here. I will tell you one thing. We spent a lot of good years in New York. She actually left New York and moved to Hawaii on December 27th, 1993, but I don't want you to think I still have a resentment about it. Is she the best sponsor in the world? I'll tell you what. She's been the best sponsor in the world for me. She didn't give me any suggestions. She told me what to do, and I needed to be told what to do. There was no kinder, gentler Narcotics Anonymous. I mean, if I had some inner child, I'll tell you, my inner child needed to have her ass whooped. I was a spoiled little brat who walked in here full of self-centered arrogance. And I needed somebody to take me by the hand, because when it talks in our literature about being reduced to the animal level of living, that was where I was when I got here. And I needed somebody to give me orders. There was a time when I came in where they used to say that if you thought about suggestions along the lines of, if you were in an airplane and the pilot suggested that you put a parachute on as the plane was going down, you'd be okay. And I try to remember that suggestions today still have that same caliber. And at 22 years clean, I'm probably more willing to take suggestions now than ever before. And I need to remember why I have a sponsor, because I am not the top of the food chain. And I love you, Fran. Time went on for me in recovery, and I grew up in a single-parent household, and I always wanted a dad, so when I had a year clean, I met him. When I had 3 years clean, I married him. He was a nice man, but we weren't a good couple, and I was very unhappy in that relationship. You see, we talk about in the basic text that social acceptability does not equal recovery and that this is an inside job. I didn't get what you meant by that. I was married. I was working. We had a house. We had a couple of cars in the driveway. We had a couple of bank accounts. Life looked good. And I found myself at 5 years clean, curled up wanting to blow my brains out and not knowing why. And the answer in all of my times of desperation in recovery has once again that there is no simpler way. There is no osmosis. I wanted to get better for so long by holding service commitments, by sponsoring a dozen women, by hanging out with people with clean time, by knowing Robert's Rules of Order better than any of you so that I could take over a business meeting, by memorizing the basic text. And you know what? The only way to heal in here is to simply pick up a goddamn pen and a piece of paper and sit down and start to do the steps. And any time my ass has been in the sling, it's back to the steps. But like a good addict, I did not have the guts to leave that relationship until I had somebody else's bags packed, sitting by the door ready to move in when he moved out. So when I had all of my ducks in a row and I had somebody else all lined up, I told my husband I wanted a divorce. And you know, it had been increasingly obvious to me for a long time through 11-step work that God's will for me was to be alone. And I didn't like that. Did you ever do that with God? Yeah, that's real nice, God. Let's do it my way now. In my experience, God always gets his way. The 11th step is about the choice. The choice is that through prayer and meditation, we work on accepting God's will, or you take a kicking and screaming, but either way, God gets his way. And God was telling me at 29 years old that it was time to start learning that I needed to take care of myself and I didn't need somebody else cemented by my hip to validate who I was. And I said, nice plan, we'll do it my way. So I asked my husband for a divorce, and the man I left him for promptly turned around and left me for somebody else, and God said, I told you. And you know what? For the first time, I lived alone, and it was okay. It really was. And when I finally got comfortable being who I was, you know, when our third step talks about just get out of the way and the miracles happen, I finally, this man came into my life. And he came in a package that I never would have chosen. I had 9 years clean. He had 2.5, a year and a half behind the walls of New York State Prison. So guys, hang in there, man. It can get better. It really does. And he had a year and 11 days outside the walls. Why do I tell you a year and 11 days? Because he always has this dream that I'm going to stand up at a podium and tell you all that I picked on him as a newcomer. Now, let's be honest. That suggestion is nowhere in our literature. And I'm not saying that I don't believe in it. But I'm also going to tell you what a dope fiend I am, because if you really think there's a whole hell of a lot of difference between having a year and 11 days. But you know, sometimes players get played. And I thought I was a player. So I'm divorced and I'm living alone for the first time and I'm thinking this is kind of okay, but it's been a while and you know, I've been staying out of a relationship and here comes this big old bad boy coming out of prison, and I thought, well, he looks like he'd be fun. My ex-husband and I sold the house, and I moved from a three-bedroom house into a three-room apartment, and he was one of the guys from NA who showed up to help me move. And he had a different agenda. He looked around, and he said, damn, she got an apartment, she's got some furniture, she's got a couple of cats, she's got a job. I think I'll stay. 13 years later, he hasn't left. And I love you, David. I really do. For the first time in my life, I found somebody who loved me for exactly who I am and not in spite of me. And I'm going to tell the World Board something real quick, that you paid him the biggest homage and honor, whether or not you know it. Most of the fellowship knows me as Gina B. And although I have legally been Mrs. David Skelton for the last 12 years, and before a lot of you freak out about that, first of all, anonymity in the 11th tradition is at the level of press, radio, and films. It's not in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. If I'm in the hospital, you are not going to call, if you want to, you know, call me up and say, you know, little Gina from New York, the one with the dark hair, right? And Skelton, hello. But I stayed Gina B in spite of being Mrs. Skelton for 12 years, and that was my own little identity thing, you know. She had this problem with the B because Bianchini was actually my ex-husband's name. I don't know, testosterone gets you testy like that, doesn't it? So with one little slip of the keyboard, you've made David very happy. Gina S. In 1993, David and I found out that we were pregnant. And when we got over the surprise, we actually started to look forward, and we were really happy. I was going into my fifth month. I was wearing maternity. I had this belly, and I was listening to this little heartbeat. We went into the OB one day, and he put the stethoscope down on my stomach, and he moved it around, and he moved it around, and he finally shook his head, and he pulled the stethoscope out of his ears, and he said, "I'm sorry, you don't have a heartbeat. Your baby's dead." And in a moment, my world shattered. I walked out of that doctor's office, and we stood in the parking lot, and we cried, and we cried. And he finally said to me, "What do you want to do?" And I thank God that in a program of repetition, you have told me repeatedly when I don't know what else to do, pick your ass up and go to a meeting. If your ass falls off, take it with you. Somebody will put it back on. And I said, "Please just take me to the meeting." And I went to that meeting and I sat there and I let you love me and I let you hold me and I let you tell me it was going to be all right, although it didn't feel all right at that moment. You know, my sponsor always talked to me about spiritual experiences, and what she explained to me they were was that feeling when you were in the right place at the right time, at the right moment, that you were supposed to be there just when, and that feeling that comes over you when you know that you are exactly where God wants you to be. 3 years before, a convention in Texas had asked me to come and speak, and unfortunately I had to work that weekend, and I said, "If you ever think again, I'd be more than glad to come." I'd forgotten about them. I didn't hear from them. But when I came home from that meeting 3 years later, there was a message from that convention in Texas again asking me to please come down. And you know what? It didn't make everything okay, but it was just another reminder at the lowest point of my recovery that God reminds me all the time that if I don't give up and I hold on through the storms, that the miracles and blessings are still going to come if I just give it 5 more minutes and hold on to my chair and... I tried for 7 years to get pregnant. I went through 3 in vitros. I made 22 embryos. And the doctors finally told me it was time to stop. And I needed to accept that I wasn't ever going to have biological children. And I was so angry at God. I finally was doing some writing, and my sponsor said to me, "Do you want to get pregnant or do you want to be a mother?" And I had to sit and think about it. So I did some writing and I came back and I said, "I want to be a mom." She said, "Getting pregnant isn't the only way to be a mom." So I finally became open-minded to adoption. I went to an attorney and I went to speak to him and he gave me a ton of paperwork and he said, "Oh, it'll be about a year and a half and probably around $25,000. And I came home and I threw the papers in the kitchen and I said, "Thank you, God, another brick wall." I have to tell you, my worst character defect is procrastination, and this is the first year that I've actually become open-minded to doing something about it. For the longest time in recovery, I truly believed in not doing anything I could possibly put off until tomorrow, next week, or even indefinitely was okay. So my husband was always getting pissed at me because I used to make plans and never tell him what we were doing until the last minute. I'll get to that in a sec. So we go to see this attorney on a Monday, and on Sunday he calls me up from work and he says, "There's this land auction going on up at this hotel. Come on, let's go see." So I said, "All right." So we go on to this land auction, and we walk in there, and they've got those red rope stanchions, and as I walk up, they said, "Where's your certified check?" And I said, "What certified check?" And they said, oh, you have to have a certified check to get in here. And I said, well, your paper doesn't say you need a certified check. Tell an addict they can't get in someplace. Now, mind you, I'm not here to buy anything anyway. I'm here just to look because my husband wants to see what's going on. But if this is not my best moment in recovery, I am not practicing any principles. I am getting loud and making a scene until the man finally said, please come in, Mrs. Skelton. So I watched them. They auction off the first two parcels of land, and the third one comes up. And I see my husband all of a sudden. He's, like, raising his hand, and I'm looking at him like, what the fuck are you doing? So I see his hand go up three times, and the next thing I hear is sold. And I got people pushing these papers in front of me, wanting me to sign my name, attesting that I'm going to pay them $100,000, and congratulations, you just bought 5 acres in nowhere, New York. And I'm like, what the hell did you do? Somehow over the next week, I managed to get a loan on my 401k, and I managed to secure this land mortgage. And I'm thinking, why am I doing this? What do I need this land for, and why did you raise your hand? But 2 weeks after that, he comes home on a Saturday, and he walks in around 5 o'clock, and I said, I'm supposed to be speaking in New Jersey in an hour. And he's like, what? I said, I'm supposed to be speaking in New Jersey in an hour. God damn it, you and your procrastination, you never tell me anything. We get in the car and we go out to New Jersey, and he is cussing me out the whole way down the Garden State Parkway. We finally get to the speaker jam. They're running about an hour behind. They had a basketball tournament, a fish fry. Everybody's hot. They're tired. Nobody cares what I have to say. I'm in an auditorium. There's no mic. Nobody can hear me. I got to tell you, they're knocking each other out to get out the doors. And I'm thinking to myself, God, why am I here? For the first time ever, I shared at a podium that I'd become open-minded to adoption. And a man I had never seen before walked up to my husband and said, there's a young addict in our area who's pregnant. She just got out of rehab, and she's looking to place the baby. Can I give you her number? I need to get home tomorrow night so I can get back to New York on Tuesday. On Wednesday, my son Connor starts kindergarten. And I learned so much about unconditional love from this teenage addict who loved this child she had never seen enough to give him an opportunity that she knew that she couldn't offer. And in exchange, she made me a mom. For the longest time, I sat in these rooms and I heard you talk about just for today, live for the moment. Tomorrow's not promised. And I repeated it, but I didn't internalize it. Until about 4 years ago this week, it was a beautiful late summer Tuesday morning in New York, and I was sitting in my office a little before 9 o'clock, drinking coffee, reading my email, and minding my business. My sister-in-law called me, and she said, a plane just flew into the World Trade Center. And I remember looking out the window and thinking, how did he miss it? I walked down to the south end of my building and I watched the first tower burn while I watched the second plane come around and slam the second south tower. And it was at that moment that I realized that I'm stuck on an island that's being attacked. I made my way back to Grand Central, and my husband works for the railroad. I saw one of the guys and I said, please, I need to get out of here. He said, just get over to track 27. I got on that train not even knowing where it was going and not really caring at that moment. And when we finally got out of the city, the conductor made an announcement that we were the last train to leave. The Grand Central had officially closed. But you know what? On that day, 3,000 other regular Joes like me got up and went to work and didn't make it home. And I finally, after 18 years, understood what you meant by just for today. I finally understood what you meant, that every day wasn't promised, that tomorrow may not come, and how to live life to the fullest, that all of the petty bullshit that I think is so important, all of the petty ridiculousness about money problems and relationship problems and who said what about me and who talked to who and who's going with. It is so unimportant. This isn't a dress rehearsal. I have become today one of those people that I used to laugh at. I have become one of those people that I used to look at and think, why the hell do you want to get up in the morning and go to work? Why do you want to get up in the morning and you know, pay your bills? Why do you want to have a family? Why do you want to keep your house clean? Why do you want to be responsible? Why? Because I put my head down on the pillow at night and I don't have any noise in my head. You have allowed me to come all the way back. The greatest gift that Narcotics Anonymous has given me has been the ability to live comfortably inside of my own skin and be okay being who I am. It has gotten nothing but better for the last 22 years, and I sold myself short. I copped short for a long time. I don't want to cop short, and here I have no reason to believe that it isn't just going to keep on getting better from here on in. Do I have another run in me? Maybe. I don't know. Why would I give up what I have and chance it? Why would I give up my life as I know it today? I have watched too many of us think that they had another shot and have an everything must go sale. And I am not willing to have an everything must go sale. I have worked too damn hard for what I have today. For those of you who are here, who are new, who have no idea what's going on, you have no idea why you're here, let me tell you, I do not believe that normal people, whoever they are, wake up in the morning and say, you know what, I think I'll go to an NA meeting tonight. If you're here, there's a reason. I strongly suggest that you give it 90 days. And if you don't like what we have to offer at the end, you can pick your misery back up at the door on your way back out again. But for those of you who are here, keep coming back. Starts getting a little trite. Because there's been a lot of us who have kept coming back and kept coming back and thought we were going to get the chance to keep coming back one more time. So if you're here, please simply stay. I have had the privilege and the honor of being asked to carry the message of Narcotics Anonymous to thousands of people around the world, and it's an honor that I don't take lightly. But one day when I'm gone from here, it's more important to me that you remember me not so much for the things that I've said, but for how I've lived. It is my sincere hope today to be a kind, loving, and gentle woman, and not just to act that way to your face and stab you when you turn around, because I can do that too. But to be a kind, loving, and gentle woman, and I hope for anyone that I've had any encounters with during the weekend, that you have walked away with a feeling of love from me, because I know what I put out is what I get back, and I want a lot of love. Narcotics Anonymous has taken me beyond my wildest dreams. And for those of you who are here on the phone who can't see, 8,000 recovering addicts in downtown Waikiki. Can you imagine? I am someone who could not get off of the block. I could not get out of my apartment. You have given me more than I have ever dreamt possible. And I'm going to leave you with the story that I always close with. And if you've ever heard me share, I'm sorry. I always close with it. There was a woman who wanted to learn all that there was to know. So she went up into the mountains and she found a guru. He gave her a pile of books and he said, you study, I'll be back. So he came back a few days later and he said, have you learned all that there is to know? And she said, no. And he picked up a heavy wooden cane he was leaning on and he whacked her over the head with it. And this went on for some time. He would come in, he would ask the same question, he would get the same answer, and he would do the same thing. He came in one morning and he said, "Have you learned all that there is to know?" And she said, "No." And he raised the cane to strike her, and she reached out in midair and she grabbed it. And she was scared. She didn't know what he was going to do. He put the cane down and he smiled and he said, "Congratulations, you've learned all that you need to know." You have finally accepted that you will never learn all that there is to know, and you have learned how to stop the pain. And I believe that that is the message that you give me on a daily basis in Narcotics Anonymous. I'll never learn all that there is to know, but at least hopefully today I'm not recreating that same old pain. If no one else has told you today that they love you, please let me be the first to tell you from the bottom of my heart that I love you and God loves you also. I hope that you had a wonderful weekend filled with peace and serenity. And before you leave, if there's anyone to whom you owe an amends, make it. If you have a resentment, let it go. If someone doesn't know that you love them, tell them. This is our opportunity to cleanse and grow. And I hope that I have left this place a little better than I found it, as you taught me to do. If anyone out there ever asks you how Narcotics Anonymous works, you let them know. How does it work? It works just fine. I hope that you had a wonderful convention. Thank you. God bless you. Thank you for having me share. And mahalo.
Let's thank Gina again for a great message. Thank you. So aloha, everybody. I'm Tom and I'm an addict. Okay, we're going to start the clean time countdown. We're going to have Sharon and Bob W. come up here. They're members of the support committee. And, you know, and I just want to say real quick, this to me, you know, I attended the first Narcotics Anonymous meeting here in Hawaii, you know, about 32 years ago, and it happened about 200 or 300 yards over here. And it's like, you know, so when this thing first started coming together, you know, and I'm sitting here, I'm watching all these people pouring into this room, and I'm thinking about the 7 members who sat in that room for the first time, and you know what? A bunch of them are still clean. You know, and it's just, I can't tell you the pride, the joy that I have today, because, you know, we would never thought this would ever happen. Thank you all for coming. You guys are doing it. Okay, we're here. So just follow instructions.
That's right.
Jim and Tom, take the podium, sit down. You guys go.